Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No! It's the Flight Free Podcast. One presenter. One special guest. One mission to save planet Earth. Will they succeed? Find out in this thrilling episode of the Flight Free Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Flight Free Podcast. This is our 2023 series, which is called In Conversation With, where we talk to people who have particularly inspired us about their various flight free travels or why they're choosing to stay grounded. I'm Anna, and I'm particularly excited about our guest this month because we've both done quite similar journeys. So 10 years ago, I went on an adventure which was cycling around the coast of Britain. And our guest has done the journey on foot. So we have a lot to talk about and a lot to celebrate about this wonderful island where we live. Our guest this month is Quintin Lake, photographer, walker and adventurer. Hello, Quintin. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Anna. It's great to be here.
Could you tell our listeners a bit about your work and where you're from?
Yeah, sure. So I've been a photographer for 25 years. I originally trained as an architect. I actually worked on sustainable architecture and on the Eden Project, but it didn't fit very well with my wanderlust. So then I transferred to photography and I earned my living taking commercial photography and doing art photography based on landscape walks. And in the last 10 years, that side of my life has become the main thing. And I've always loved long walking. And I've walked from John O'Groats to Glasgow with my mum when I was 10. And then when I was 20, I walked Land's End to John O'Groats. And every year I'd done these long travels. And interestingly, to your main theme, I'd always traveled abroad by plane to find inspiration. And then it was about sort of 7-8 years ago, I started to become more fascinated by the British landscape as a photographer, because I found it's so remarkable, and I was actually finding I was getting more inspired by it. So I did these river walks from the source of the Severn to the sea and the source of the Thames to the sea. And not only did I love it, it was kind of quiet and it was cheap and I wild camped, but I also produced the best work I'd ever made, I think, because the stakes were kind of lower and my eyes were sort of more open by going slower and not having any big stakes. You know, if you travel somewhere that's expensive and a long flight, then in a way the stakes are quite high to enjoy yourself, apart from the environmental issue, aren't they? Because you've saved up all this time, and if you're not having fun, why not? And that doesn't really work, does it? Doesn't really, because travel isn't like that.
Yeah, I think that applies to lots of types of travel, actually, doesn't it? Not just photography, which is what you're talking about, but even holidays. You know, there's this pressure to go far away or somewhere exotic, even though you might just have a better holiday closer to home. Anyway, so specifically thinking about photography, we actually recorded a previous podcast episode with a photographer called Ian Green, who's a wildlife photographer. And his story is quite similar to yours, actually. He did a lot of flying to faraway places to photograph big cats in Africa. And then he quit flying because of environmental concerns. And he ended up taking the photograph of his career in his back garden. He'd found a kingfisher asleep on a branch.
Oh, wow. That's what a beautiful experience.
And he says those photographs were just his absolute favourite from any photograph he'd ever taken. So, yeah, it's kind of like what you were saying about finding that inspiration close to home and it being maybe more genuine it's certainly possible to find that inspiration close to home.
Yeah. That's the kind of life-changing thing, isn't it? And it just makes you realize it's about looking more carefully than traveling often.
So let's rewind a little bit. Let's go back to the whole idea behind the walk in the first place. So you've said that slowing down is great for inspiration and staying home is great for inspiration as well. And you had done some long walks from source to sea along rivers and things like that. But the coast is just so massive. So what was it that drew you to the coastline of Britain and made you think, I want to walk every inch of that?
Well, it was finishing the Severn walk at Bristol. I kind of didn't, the official Severn Way ends at Bristol. And I just thought I'd just do another few days and did the coastal bit and was just blown away by how many different stories there were every few meters. You could kind of go from meeting really interesting people to some weird bit of industry to some amazing mud flat to some glyphs, and all just in a few meters, and thought this was even more inspiring than the river walk. And I thought this is something I could tie these sort of skills I'd sort of developed of outdoor skills with photography. And I felt I kind of had a vision here that I could share and had some value. And it's kind of weird when I think about it now, because it's been an 8-year project. So the walking was 5 years. The editing was 3 years. I finished that editing in January. So it's been just so huge. And if I thought it was that much of a life when I started, like many adventures, I probably wouldn't in a way. But I just sort of thought, well, I'll give it this name, the perimeter. I'll take all my pictures in square format. I registered a domain name, and I kind of started the next week because I thought, well, I can just walk a day or two. And the idea was I'd walk in sections. And then it turned out those sections kind of grew. And in Scotland, they were 2 or 3 months long each section. But at the beginning, it felt quite low stakes, because all I was doing was, you know, anyone can kind of walk a few miles a day. And it sort of, as the journey progressed, I kind of got a system with distances and weight I was carrying and how I was carrying my camping stuff. At the beginning, it was quite low stakes.
Yeah, because of course you have a lot of equipment to take, and especially if you are wild camping or camping at all, and then you have your photography equipment. So how did the practicalities of that work? Is it all fairly transportable?
No. So my camera gear is 4 or 5 kilograms all in. So it was 2 big lenses, a very heavy body and a tripod. And in Scotland, I took a drone. So I compensated with super light. Everything else is like what marathon runners would carry for mountain marathons. So my tent is like 800 grams. My sleeping bag's sort of 700 grams in the summer. And at the beginning, I wore fell running shoes. So my base weight, so everything apart from consumables, was about 10 kilograms, and the camera would add another 5. That was in England. And then Scotland was a totally different kind of journey. It was so much more difficult because there weren't footpaths. So everything had to get sturdier and heavier. So that was more like 15 to 20 kilos, that section. And then I would walk about, on average, 25 kilometers a day. And that would allow for, on average, about 3 hours photography. And obviously that ranged hugely. So some, if it was bad weather, I might walk 40 kilometers and not take many pictures. If it was amazing weather, I'd walk less and take more pictures. And then I'd cover the extra ground by walking at night normally.
So how much planning went into this? Or did you already know how long you would spend on each leg?
But because of family and other paid work, I kind of, the date that I got to each of the trailheads and endings by train, and I sort of booked it in advance. So that meant every day that I planned to walk, I needed to walk. And in a way, that was challenging because it could be through a big storm. But for the pictures, that sometimes was great because it was terrible weather that I wouldn't normally get out of bed for. But then, you know, like over Cardiff in the winter, there was a black storm cloud and it just broke for about half an hour in the day with a magical kind of golden light. And it was a really strong picture. But, you know, I'd never have got out of bed for that if I was looking at the forecast, I'm sure you know from your journeys.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, once you're on the road, you're on the road. That's it. You've got to keep going. And you can make allowances in certain ways and take it easy if the elements are really telling you not to. But yeah, ultimately you're on a schedule, I suppose, especially if you have booked transport at the other end. Okay, so this is a photography project, and I'm on your website right now, theperimeter.uk, and these photographs are just stunning. I hope all of our listeners go and visit it immediately. And something I've noticed is they're quite unusual. So there's quite a focus on not what you might expect the photograph to be of. And I love that. I just think it's so eye-opening, focusing on the lesser spotted things. Is that part of your style?
That is part of my style. That's why I think the journey had value. I mean, we all know the sort of icons of the coast, the White Cliffs, maybe the Lizard, Stacks of Duncan's Bee. Everyone has their sort of images of iconic locations in the coast. But my experience was, although they're beautiful moments of interruption in the journey, it was more the maybe more subtle daily plays of light or these subtle things that I wanted to get across in the pictures. And that's the joy of a long walk like this. It's the unexpected moments. And then I also think things like our industrial heritage and the whether and whether it's kind of the Gaelic people, or whether it's the clearance villages, or whether it's the end of the coal mining industry. There's all these traces in the landscape which are shown in the coast, and they were to me as important as like a pictorial scene. So very much so, that's what I wanted to convey in the so hopefully people can look at the project, go to somewhere they know, and then that kind of latches them in, and then they can see these unexpected things around it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've noticed there's a few pictures of oil refineries and those kinds of things, which aren't necessarily what you'd think of as beautiful, but actually there is some kind of stark beauty in them. And I remember when I went to Port Talbot in South Wales, I just couldn't stop taking pictures of the steelworks across the beach. It was just such a juxtaposition and very imposing and very impressive.
Yes, yeah, I agree. That was one of the most incredible things I saw, with the steam plume. It kind of seemed to raise about a kilometre into the sky. And as I walked towards it, I wrote in my diary that night, it was like people sort of leaving a worshipping to an unknown god. It looked like some sort of symbol. And like in Middlesbrough, there was the huge steel plant there, and that was just demolished last year, just a few months ago. So it's really interesting about all these heavy industries, how they're sort of ending, and then all the wind turbine factories are certainly in Scotland, that was the main industry that I saw happening. So it's really interesting to literally see that changing.
Yeah, fascinating. I found actually with the coast, there is all the variety that you can find. Some parts of the coast are very wild and very rural and remote, and they feel very cut off. But then also you get cities on the coast, and sometimes you have a dual carriageway and sometimes you have a private bicycle path. And I mean, of course, for you actually being on the coast paths for much of the time, I imagine. Yeah, I think that's a wonderful thing about the coast. But I was going to just follow up the question about the photographs specifically and about the unusual angles of them. Do you think that's something that you communicate? I mean, that's something we certainly communicate at Flight Free UK, just trying to inspire people with the UK and showing that you can see it in an unusual light with new eyes. And maybe that will help people to not think they're missing out by not flying.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no way I could have taken these pictures, even if I'd driven somewhere, let alone flown somewhere. It's too fast. It's too much of a shock. It kind of takes why I love long walking as a method of opening up creativity, is you slow down and you sort of feel the landscape, and then you become in tune with it and you start to see things that you wouldn't have noticed otherwise. So it's the location, but it's also the way of getting there, I think, is important. I think human powered travel allows you to slow down and see things, apart from the potential sort of physiological benefits that the increased blood flow means your creativity and alertness are increased, and there's all those kind of things. But I think just from a point of view, slowing down enough to notice the subtle differences of things, I think that takes time.
Definitely. And yeah, let's celebrate walking as a mode of transport, because it is the epitome of slow travel. I'm more of a cyclist, so most of my holidays and tours and things are by bike, which can be quite fast. But you have an entirely different experience when you walk something. So if you were to drive a route, it's different to cycling it, which is also different to walking it. And the things you notice are different, and you have time to think in a different way. Is that why you're drawn to walking?
That's why I'm drawn to walking. And there's something kind of, I've just come back from the Cleveland Way last week, and it's just something about sleeping on the ground in the earth and seeing the stars if it's a clear night. And a couple of days of that, you just get in the rhythm of what matters. And I just find that deeply fulfilling and allows me to see things sharper. Yes. And it's the coincidental meetings, you know, if you arrive on foot, even if you're, you know, I'm southerner, even if you arrive in the north of Scotland, something about it, it's very, very different to arriving. I'm sure you find it by bike as well. People tend to respond really positively, and that's a beautiful thing. And the crazy thing about Britain is I didn't meet anyone that didn't say, "That's great, I'd love to do that." Is I kind of think it's a wonderful thing, because in a way it's completely insane. I mean, kind of wet and cold and miserable. Everything ached almost every night. That I just kind of got used to that. But yet still you just tell it to someone and they don't dismiss it. They say, that's great. I'd love to do that.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? I found with my ride, people wanted to talk to me and tell me their stories of their own bike rides. And yeah, because as you say, you're really approachable if you're walking or if you're on a bike. And I found, especially if you travel alone, I think people are more willing or likely to come and talk to you. So I've had a lot of people ask me if I feel nervous or scared about traveling as a solo female. But I never do. And I think it might be because people are willing to help you if you're traveling alone as a female. And I think, as you mentioned, those human encounters are such an integral part of what travel is. And part of my motivation for riding around the coast was to see if I could have that, if I could find those genuine travel experiences without leaving the UK. And what we think of when we talk about travel is finding new things and going to new places and meeting new people and learning about a different way of doing things or learning about yourself even. And by the time I'd finished my ride, I came to the conclusion that you absolutely can have those genuine travel experiences without really going very far at all. And you can access all that in the UK. And even those cultural experiences, actually. So that's another thing about travel, isn't it? Learning about different cultures and different foods and the way people speak. And, you know, we have that here in the UK as well with different foods and different accents.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know how many words there were for roll or cob or bath or all these different, you know, and sometimes it would be many different changes of accent and terminology just in one day. As a cyclist, you probably had like sometimes four or five accent changes in a day. Because I remember there's some parts in like going from Wales to Liverpool to Cumbria. It's so geographical. You can just move half a kilometre and it feels like a completely different world.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Okay, so here comes the most cliched question I could possibly ask. And I'm sure you get tired of hearing this one, but what was your favourite part?
I mean, Scotland was Scotland, half the journey was Scotland. And I love Scotland because the people are amazing. The landscape's amazing. You've got the right to roam, the right to camp. And it was completely sort of imbued in my soul, the whole Scottish thing for 2 years that I was there, you know, on and off. And so it felt like a bit of a bereavement to leave at the end. And then there was this little gate. And then you go from the open field on the east coast above North Berwick. And then you go into this sort of barbed wire corridor of England. So big changes.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. I'd hardly spent any time in Scotland before I did my coastal ride. And I absolutely fell in love with it. It's just such an incredible country. The landscapes, the sea, it's so huge and wild. And yeah, I know exactly what you mean about it getting into your soul. I think it's a wonderful part of the UK. Kind of overlooked as well. So, and I know there are so many parts to choose from, but do you have a top pick for a Scottish destination?
I do. It would be the Knoydart Peninsula, because it's this wild, mostly uninhabited peninsula in the Rough Bounds near Mallaig. Easy to get to by train, Mallaig. And then you need to get a boat to Inverie on the peninsula, and then you can explore the whole thing. That's the sensible way to do it. But the way that I did it was to walk this very arduous route across the mountains, because it's high mountains straight to the sea there. So you can't really follow the coastlines. You have to sort of take the mountain ridges. And the people I met and the landscapes were so phenomenal. And I think my favorite picture of the whole journey, which I called Scottish Sublime, where it seemed to be all four seasons in the same moment. And it was high up on the mountains looking over the Knoydart Peninsula. And there's a rainbow, there's black sky, there's a bit which looks summery. So I love it there.
Oh, incredible. That's a difference, actually, with walking as opposed to cycling, because I couldn't get near to those places because I had to stay on the road. So yeah, especially in Western Scotland, there's lots of places that I just had to look up at and wasn't able to go there. But yeah, Knoydart, oh, absolutely wonderful. Any second favourite parts?
Yes, in fact, it was just on leaving Scotland, because the disappointment was very short-lived, because Northumberland was so beautiful and you've got Bamber Castle, you've got Lindisfarne. There was a full moon. I walked across to the island at low tide on the Pilgrim's Path at night, and it was just magical. And then arriving at Bamber the next day, kind of tired and exhausted, looking up at the big castle wall like it must have been for a medieval pilgrim. So that, and the these vast, beautiful beaches with no one on it, beautiful light. So that was really special.
Yeah, I feel like the East Coast gets a little bit overlooked sometimes.
It does, it does.
I loved it. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Well, where was the highlight for you?
So many, but yeah, I would say the East Coast. I loved that bit coming through Northumberland as well. Bamber Castle, I remember very clearly. And even the eastern part of Scotland, because I came into Scotland that way, so I went anti-clockwise. So each part, I was just hungry for more. And so I feel like the East Coast is slightly more understated, but it was still, because I hadn't had the West Coast first, it just kept on getting better and better and better.
Yeah, no, I agree, because from my side, it was a bit like, oh, here's the East Coast. This is going to be a bit dull now compared to the West, and it absolutely wasn't like that. So, yeah, I completely agree.
So one of my other favourite parts was Cornwall, and I know that's kind of a cliche as well because it's such a tourist destination.
But it is beautiful. Yeah, it is beautiful,
there's,
yeah.
There's a reason, yeah, absolutely. And something that I really loved was seeing the difference in the quality of the water. So the colours of the sea in Scotland, it's quite lucid and light. And in Cornwall and Devon, it's just so rich and turquoise, and I couldn't wait to get in it. And, you know, we think our island is small, but there is such variety in it.
There is, yeah. And I mean, there's the sort of white sand beaches in Scotland where it also looks really, really tropical. And then in Devon, you've got the kind of ochre in the sand and the rock, which makes the sea look kind of like someone's put paint in it. You're right, it's very varied.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the practicalities, because walking around the entire coastline is one hell of a commitment. But as you say, you did it in stages. So was it easy enough to get to your start point and then back from your finish point each time?
It's quite expensive because of the train fares. I think the most expensive train fare was £168 up to the very, very north near Wick. But I generally did it by train. And then for the northwest coast, like around Torridon, which is exquisite, beautiful as well, you know, that's only really possible by training to Fort William and then getting a bus from there. And actually, that was a really cute experience because I got on a bus twice. And then the driver said, was I moving in? Was I a local now? Which I thought was just brilliant that I could get on a bus twice. And the driver thinks that I'm moving in. I really loved that. But he just said that's how I did it. And that's, it was partly the lack of train stations why I did much longer legs in Scotland.
So I know we're talking exclusively about the coast now, but there are other walking routes in the UK. I mean, there are lots of long distance paths. So you say that you've walked from along rivers. Have you done any of the long distance paths like the Pennine Way or the North Downs or the South Downs Way, perhaps?
As it happens, I'm about to finish the last one. So that's been my project because the perimeter has taken 3 years to edit. I'm just preparing a book for it. So it's been an awful lot of screen time. So 3 or 4 times a year, I've done a long distance trail. So I'm about to finish the last one this summer, which will be the Pennine Bridle Way. So that I finished the Cleveland Way last week and Hadrian's Wall, which was magical, a couple of months earlier, and then a Pedder's Way, which is this old Roman road that went from Colchester to the coast and joins the coast that I walked in the perimeter. I did that in the frozen winter this year. So I mean, all of them have this wonderful kind of character. I mean, Hadrian's Wall would be for me the most single-minded of the walks because you really feel like you're walking in history every step of the way. And you've got the kind of Scottish-English proximity and you're near the Pennines, and yeah, it was really, really extraordinary.
Yeah, I'd love to do the Hadrian's Wall path and cycling as well. It's a national cycle network route, 72 I think, goes from the east coast to the west coast. There's lots of coast to coast cycleways actually, and that's one of the main ones. So are there lots of other people out on the trails then? You say you did one in the winter.
the West Island Way and Hadrian's Wall has got the strongest kind of trail culture of meeting the same people every day, and it's quite easy. Honesty boxes, things like that. Well, signposted, yeah, you almost don't need a map, and you should still take one if it's misty, but yeah. And then at the other end of the scale, there's Glendower's Way, which would be the remotest beautiful walk, goes from the border of England, Wales to Macuntlith and then back again across the kind of green heart of Wales. I didn't meet a single hiker on the whole trail. And by far the most difficult and exciting long distance trail in my mind is the Cambrian Way, which walks across the spine of Wales from the south coast to the north. So it's not an official long distance path, but it takes in 40 summits. So you go through the Brecons, through the Elan Valley, through Cadair Idris. It's just magnificent, and you're up nearly the whole time. And it's very, very physically challenging if you're backpacking, but it's fantastic. If you can navigate well, it's the best in my view.
Yeah, well, that's a great message to drive home, I think, that we shouldn't overlook the UK, and walking is a fantastic way to see it. And there are so many options for long distance walks or short walks. As you said, anybody can go and walk just a couple of hours, and you can see so much even in that time, which I think is fantastic.
Absolutely. And you're just going to do a couple of hours every couple of weeks, and then in time that adds up to a long trail. And then I think kind of tying your travel into a longer goal, it gives it a sense of purpose. If you're kind of a bit tired or distracted, you know, oh, I know what I'm doing. I'm doing the next section of the Thames Path. And it kind of means that you build it up easily. And I really enjoy that with my family. We do these trails as well. And it gives a really nice sense of purpose. And then everyone's really chuffed that, you know, even my kids who are sort of 8 and 10, they've walked quite long trails just by doing a little bit over the weekends. It adds up.
Yeah, we all need to do more of that, don't we? Well, thank you, Quentin. I think it's so inspiring to speak about the treasures that we have here on our doorstep. And I hope that people are inspired to look more at your work. So we've mentioned your website already, theperimeter.uk. Do you have any other places that people can go and find you?
I'm most active on Twitter and sort of secondary Instagram. On both those, I'm at Quentin Lake. And I always answer any questions, technical or travel, that I might be asked on either of those.
Excellent. Thanks, Quentin. Do you have any last things you want to share, or any tips for people wanting to do something like this?
I would encourage people to wild camp. I would encourage people not to be too concerned about the legalistic aspects in England. I think the wild spaces are ours and we should use them. But be no trace. In fact, I would say be better than no trace. I try and leave my campsites cleaner than I found them. But the practicalities, I've never had a single, in literally hundreds of nights camping in England. I tend to pitch it late as it's getting dark and then break camp early in the morning. And I would only do that either alone or with one other person. But I find that really opens up the landscape and makes it easy to explore the wild places that are close to you. I suppose another tip would be, you know, if you're new to long distance walking, would be to choose a easier trail. So I would say like the easier trails would be something like the Thames Coast Path or the South Downs Way, or further north, it could be an easier section of the Pennon Way or the Speyside Way. They would all be easier, great ones to start with.
Great advice. Thank you, Quentin. Well, it's been wonderful speaking to you, and really lovely to celebrate the UK and to celebrate walking and cycling a little bit as well. And I hope that our listeners are inspired to get out there and explore a little bit more of the UK and maybe take on a long or a short distance walk of their own. So thanks once again for joining us, Quentin. And thank you, listener, for joining us as well. And we look forward to welcoming you again next month when we'll have another inspiring conversation. Until then, stay safe and stay grounded.
This podcast was brought to you by the team at Flight Free UK. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to join the Flight Free Challenge for 2023. All you need to know for your challenge is at flightfree.co.uk. The Flight Free Podcast will return!